Good morning and welcome to the December 2nd, 2019 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I trust that everyone has amply full still from Thanksgiving, so we welcome you all today. I'd also like to thank you for coming and also remind you that if you have an electronic device of any kind that makes noise, would you please at this moment silence that device or perhaps turn it off. Today is both a business session and a study session, with the morning starting at a little after 10 a.m. The afternoon session scheduled for 1 o'clock today. However, we have a somewhat short agenda, and we might be able to get through perhaps most of it this morning. We welcome public input at our meetings and remind you that our meetings are recorded, that if you wish to address any item on the agenda, we ask that you come to the microphone, please state your name and address for the record, and please limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have four commissioners present. Commissioner Bolts is excused and is not here and not present today. General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Garfin, Clerk of the Board, are with us this morning. If you'd please join me in a safety minute and a pledge of allegiance by Tony Nelson.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. Good morning. There we go. My name's Tony Nelson, and I'm the Director of Central Maintenance, and I'm here to share the HPI safety mindset today with you guys. So as leaders, we can influence mindset through teaching and coaching and leading by example. And today, I have a story that I think is a great demonstration of that leadership. So this story is not my story. It was given to me by my son, Alex. And Alex is in the United States Army. And going into the Army, you go through boot camp. So boot camp is a journey of conditioning, discipline, and leadership. And on top of that, you go through 16, 24, 30-hour days of conditioning. And then on top of that, they get the opportunity to do what they call fire watch. And fire watch is a two-person team, and they're based at the doors of the barracks, and it's a 12-hour shift. So as you can imagine, after these long days of 20 hours, and then you're standing in there or sitting in the dark guarding a door, it's pretty easy to fall asleep. So my son is laying in bed one early morning, and the lights come on, and Drill Sergeant McAllister comes in, and he goes, "Everybody up." So Alex and the rest of the group, they jump up out of bed, and they're standing in front of their beds at attention, and Drill Sergeant McAllister walks in, and he goes, "We had these two people fall asleep." So Alex is thinking, "Oh my gosh, we're going to be doing push-ups and sit-ups for the next 2 days." I mean, that's the military way. It's physical learning, physical training. So he goes, "Everybody sit down here on the floor. I want to talk to you guys, and I want you to understand how important Firewatch is." So Drill Sergeant McAllister says, "I'm going to tell you a story." And here's how his story went. He said, "When I was in Iraq, I had two friends fall asleep during fire watch. And that night, the enemy snuck in, and I lost two friends. And they snuck in, and I lost two more friends before we were able to stop them." So he goes, "That night, I lost four friends because we fell asleep during fire watch. And that's how important fire watch is to me, and it should be that important to you." And the great thing about that message that he told them that night was he changed their mindset. And he didn't do it through push-ups, sit-ups, or physical learning. But he did it through leadership, did it through teaching, and he did it through setting and leading by example. So I've shared that message dozens of times around the district. It's a great message. And the things that I leave with the groups that I share it with is that we get great safety equipment. We receive excellent training, safety, on HPI, on our five principles, but until we make it important to us, it's not going to be as effective as it can be. So I ask those groups to come together, learn from our mistakes, share those, but most important of all, I ask them to take the opportunity to lead by example. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great message, Tony.
Thank you.
Very powerful.
For the board, so I'll just say Tony is one of our strongest leaders on HPI, and I really appreciate everything you're doing.
Thank you.
Great. Good message. Thank you.
Really well done.
So, commissioners, do we want to move on to the consent, or are we going to do a public hearing?
The approval of the agenda.
Approval of the agenda.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. So let's move on to the approval of the agenda. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Based on recommendation from management, I'd like to suggest that we move items 12, 13, 14, and 15 onto the consent agenda, and that be the new agenda moving forward with those items moved.
You know what? I'm catching up here. The resolution, the NOAANet resolution, is that 14? I'm just looking right now. NOAANet. Yes. Wait, no, it isn't.
It's number 12.
Actually. It's number 12. I'd like to keep that on the regular agenda, if we could, please.
Okay. Brenda, you're okay with that?
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Okay. And was item 16 one of the ones you recommended as well?
14, 15,
no.
I think.
No, not 16. Right. Because it was a sole source. We left that.
All right. Do we have a second on that? And was yours effectively a second because you changed
Was it a motion?
Yeah. You don't need a motion.
No. Okay.
We need a motion.
Everybody agree.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So it carries. Now we have the advanced metering. Would you like to?
Sure. Let me. Take a moment to introduce this. I want to invite John Stoll and Lindsay Mons to come up today. Recall that we had a significant public process more than a year ago and came to a conclusion with respect to advanced metering infrastructure that we would be proceeding with that. A great deal of work has gone on in the last year. We've issued an RFP. We've concluded on a vendor. We're in negotiations with that vendor right now. One of the commitments at that time was that we would have an opt-out policy and that we would put that in place before we initiated AMI. So we are now bringing back that conversation about what an opt-out policy might look like. And with that, I'll turn it over to John and to Lindsay.
Thank you, Steve. Yes, after Steve's setup, we're here to introduce the opt-out policy. There's been a team that's been doing some review of best practices, looking at our neighboring utilities and whatnot. We have the benefit that we're a later adopter of advanced metering, so there's a lot of good lessons out there and people who've kind of paved the way for us. So we certainly took advantage of that. So we want to introduce the policy at a pretty high level. We've got some industry comparisons. Lindsay's going to talk a bit about the cost ranges that are being developed. And last but not least, we still want to talk about some of the benefits that not opting out you get with advanced meters. As Steve mentioned, we've been working at this for a couple years now. We went through a pretty rigorous request for proposal effort that concluded a couple of months ago, and we selected Itron as the advanced metering system vendor. Itron's been around, significant Northwest presence, and they emerged as the leader, and the district-wide team selected them. Advanced metering opt-out policy, pretty much at the baseline, it's residential. That's what we've seen, and with the metering characteristics, it's really aimed at the residential single-phase meters. So we heard loud and clear, and the board gave us the direction that we should have an opt-out policy. So again, that's where we've spent some time over the past few months looking at that. I've talked about the industry trends, what we've seen from other utilities, what we've learned from them, and some of the best practices that go into it. This is the high-level summary, just the key elements of it. Again, I mentioned the residential single-phase service. Some multifamily services up to 4 units. Again, that tends to be a pretty common practice if that's desired. Some other factors that go into this, satisfactory payment history, both current and previous, accessibility to the meter. So again, if something's been enclosed or hard to access, it's really important that we can take advantage of that capability. Compliance with utility service regulations, and normal residential consumption. So, you know, again, there's probably more nuances to this, but when you boil it all up, these are kind of the key guidelines that go into being able to opt out. So when it comes to the meter, what staff is recommending, we'd like to standardize on one meter. Again, being a late adopter of AMI, we've seen these meters evolve over the past 15 years to the point where you can disable the communication device. So you will have one meter, but with the communication device disabled, we are still able to gain some of the benefits. You'll see on this meter, there's a couple little ports that provides the capability on a quarterly basis, most likely, to go out and actually download a lot of those meter elements, not only the energy, the demand, you know, the voltage, the things, the power quality issues that you get with AMI on a real-time basis. With this, you know, obviously it would be more interval, but we're able to use that for system analysis.
Right at the site.
Yeah, correct. But that's a physical visit and a physical download. Obviously, some of the pros are that we're not inventorying multiple meters. It's a pretty quick activation. You know, say somebody decides to, you know, take advantage of the AMI, there's a turnover, what have you. My understanding, it's the ability to actually do it at a computer to enable it through the firmware to go ahead and turn it back on. And again, with this approach, you do have the ability to get a lot of that data that provides from advanced metering. Again, talking to the vendors, talking to iTron, one of the things it would do, you can program these so even the front screen would flash that the radio is disabled, so somebody could look at that and see it. This is pretty common when you go out and you look at utilities who have opt-out policies. Again, most people do, most utilities, but it's just a good reminder of the benefits customers receive with advanced meters, from energy alerts, view daily energy usage. What we're hearing more and more is prepaid metering is really taking off throughout the industry, so, and that takes advantage of advanced metering. A really good example I heard is, you know, if you sign up for that, you get these daily alerts that say normally you use $1 of energy a day, and boy, yesterday you used $3. You know, did you leave the heat on, or was there something unusual that happened? It's really been a big customer benefit that folks enjoy. Again, when they're prepaying, they can really kind of manage their utility bill. Outage detection, outage management, that's a big benefit of this, and be able to get alerts and information around that. And again, with our AMI system, we're not adding any additional fees to it, both on a monthly or a one-time basis. Again, the business case was really built on a lot of the operational savings we get from these advanced meters.
Let me just interrupt for 1 second and say, I was among those who thought, why would a customer want to prepay? And maybe there's a small number that would want to do that. It turns out that these other utilities are finding it's a large number, and the reason is because you avoid the security deposit. So somebody gets into trouble in terms of paying their bill, now they can use their security deposit to help pay off their bill, then they switch over to prepay from there. Now they're getting information in advance as to when their bill is rising, and they know that, so they're able to better manage their energy use. You know, this board has particularly been concerned about low-income customers. Turns out that the other utilities are finding that low-income customers are quite supportive and really want this service to be available to them.
Yeah, you've heard that with younger generations too. I mean, in the future, we'll have more payment options for customers. So what we hear, again, through the industry is somebody goes to the store, buys a few items, and puts the change on their power bill and on their prepayment plan. I'm going to turn this over to Lindsay, who's done a lot of work with the team looking at some of the costs and what goes into those costs, and she'll talk about the cost ranges that, you know, we've developed to date.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. As you can imagine, program costs are a hot topic associated with opt-out programs. We've seen a lot of news or information from other utilities associated with this very topic. Looking at our program and elections as far as, or desires for the metering perspective. We look at costs in three different areas, one being field services. So this is the metering itself. How do we configure the meters, install the meters, read the meters, all of that. We look at data integration, which is on our system engineering side, taking that information from an opt-out meter. When we go out and download information, what does it take to get that into our models so that we can utilize all the benefits of the rest of our AMI system for predictive modeling, for look-back modeling to see, you know, how our system is operating. And then the third area would be administration. So both in the initial administration of applications for opt-out programs, but also in the monthly and quarterly metering and billing perspective of that.
Lindsay, may I jump in here? Data integration. So I think if we look at other districts, the number of people who have actually opt-out is really, really small. What was the number you shared with us? Less than 1%.
Less than 1% is what we've been seeing, yes.
So how large is that cost for data integration? And is it really important if you have less than one, if you say you have 100 customers?
Yeah, that's something that looking at. The completeness of our data is a big piece of the benefits that the data provides. And the distribution of the customers, so are they spread out or are they locally in one spot, can impact that. So we may only have 1%, but you may look at a certain community and it's 50%. You know, that's probably a very high estimate. But you could see where that would start to skew the data, and the information that we would have isn't as high quality. But you're right. You know, we could find that it's not a big impact. That's where when we look at costs, we're looking at things that we think might happen. We think we might need. When we look at cost in advance of establishing a program, we really try to capture everything, and then we'll look back later and say, what is this really costing, or what impact is this really happening?
Yeah, having? Good. I thought probably you would, but if we can, you know, estimate what the cost is and, in my opinion, land on the low end of that minimal, and then if we find it's really costing us a lot more than that, then, in fact, then we could adjust it.
One of the things you'll hear is we're proposing putting these in the fees and charges, recognizing that once we start implementing, we see how many folks have opted out, tracking those costs via work orders, we'll get a really good analysis of how much does it cost, and then you can adjust accordingly.
All right, so there's two different types of fees associated with opt-out programs. One is a one-time fee, which is establishing the meter without its communicating abilities, both initially, and part of that fee associated with once you're no longer an opt-out, what does it cost to bring that meter back into our standard configuration? So in this area, we have two different truck rolls, potentially, one being the initial install and configuration, and the other being at the end of the life of this particular opt-out customer's meter, the second truck roll. And then we also have administrative costs for the application process and reviewing their account to make sure that they are eligible for the program and all of those things. So we have a range of costs here that add up to somewhere in the range of $300 to $400. The initial meter configuration, if we know this customer is planning to opt out before we deploy our AMI system, we have the ability to land on the low end of this because we're already going to be visiting that customer. So that could be somewhere in the $80 range up to $165 if we have to spend the full 2 hours. And we got the 2 hours just from looking at our service territory, where our customers are located. And, you know, we think that's probably an average of what it would take. You know, some customers will be close right here in Wenatchee. Some of them will be in Lake Wenatchee. So if we average it out, we think 2 hours is reasonable. We do have an opportunity on this fee and the monthly fee, which we'll talk about next, to look at our low-income customers. So those qualifying senior and disabled customers, and applying a discount associated with these fees as well, just like we do on our residential rate schedules It's about 20% discount that they receive there based on an average bill, and we could do the same here if that was the board's wishes. The second fee would be monthly fees. With the proposal policy that we have in place now, we would propose reading meters quarterly. So having a meter reader or a meter technician going out to the premises once a quarter to look at those meters. That's an 2-hour, give or take, time investment there. They would also download all the data associated with that meter and do the configuration for transfer to engineering services. Administrative costs in this area are associated with the monthly estimating. So what we would do is read the meters quarterly, and then each month in between, we would estimate a usage based on their previous year, same month usage. So there is some administration associated with that, but it is less costly than actually reading a meter every month. And then they would have a true up on a quarterly basis. Of course, you can imagine that does bring questions from the customer as well. So there is some cost associated with that additional customer service. And yes.
You're right there. Can I ask, yes. Are you okay with us asking questions?
Of course. Roll please.
So if you had the option for a resident to have, could they have the option to have their meter read quarterly at a lower fee or read monthly where that usage was more accurate and reflected in their bill? Is that a possibility, or is it going to be standardized?
I think we certainly could do that. You'll see in a moment that the monthly fees that we have here, this $30 to $80, is on the high end of the range already. If we went to a monthly fee, the meter reading section here where it says $20 to $57 could triple. So that could add an additional $40 to $120 to that monthly fee, which is significant. Mm-hmm. So, but if the customer really wanted, I think it probably we could. The one item on here, the quarterly data integration portion, does assume 100 participants in the program. So this is the one item on these costs that would vary depending on how many customers that we had interested. So if there are more customers, this cost comes down on a per customer basis. If there are less, it could go up. Right now, for 100 customers, it's about $13 a month that we would anticipate that quarterly effort to take.
Lindsay, so that's estimating 40 hours of time involved in doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Seems like you'd just be pushing some buttons and pull all of it together. I can't imagine.
Don't you have to physically go out and take the information from the meter then?
But that's included in it.
That we would pull that information when we're doing the quarterly portion. But if you think about the fact that they're all on different feeders, the data may be configured differently, different areas of the system, and then looking at how to integrate that. That's what our engineers thought. Now, of course, this is another area where we're going to have to see, what does it really take? Right now, our engineering modeling that happens on an annual basis for our system takes about a month for an engineer to do all of the modeling. So from that perspective. So, of course, geographic density or where the customers are located impacts meter reading. So if we can read 3 meters on one trip, that brings the cost down to the low end of the range. If we have to make a special trip for 1 meter, it's a higher cost. But on average, we're assuming it or thinking it'll be around $60 a month for that meter reading portion. And all in, $30 to $80. And again, in this case, we could offer a low-income discount if that was the board's desire. Looking at these costs, so the title here says fees. It would be more accurate to say cost because this is what we anticipate the cost to be. When we look at other utilities, these are the fees that they've established. And one thing to note here is that these aren't necessarily their cost. So on the majority, utilities have established their fees at something less than their actual cost. From what we can tell, Grant PUD would be the ones that are closest to their cost. Doing some research, for example, Avista, because all of their rate proceedings are public and posted on the UTC, we're able to see that when they first proposed their program, their actual cost for the one-time installation was $350. So, but their fee is established at $75. So there is a lot of consideration that goes into these fees as far as, you know, what do we think it's going to cost? What does it actually cost? The one area I was able to find some information on actual costs compared to fees is out of California, because they have been doing this for quite some time now. And they are finding that their fees are still set at about 50% of what their actual cost is. And then the rest of that cost is being borne by the rest of the ratepayers in their normal rates. So there are options for the commission here. We do have, you know, fairly high cost associated with what we think this program would be. But it really is up to your thoughts and direction where you would like us to take that as far as a proposal on fees. So with that, we're on to next steps, unless you have any questions associated with these. Yes.
A couple thoughts. So how do you plan to proceed with this, Lindsay? Do you want us to take some time and think about it, and then you'll come back in 2 weeks?
Yes, feedback would be fantastic. If that's in 2 weeks, or you have thoughts before then,
and then you'll
thoughts
hear
today.
Yeah, you'll hear from all of us, and then kind of land on something that will be a recommendation that comes from you for us to then make a decision on. Or how do you?
Yes,
how
eventually
would you do that?
We would need to have this adopted via resolution. So as part of fees and charges and our policies, establishing an opt-out program, that would be the process for that.
Would you say how quickly you come back? In some respect, depends on how the next 5 or 10 minutes goes, to be honest, because we're looking for guidance from the board. So if you are ready to provide some guidance to us, then we can begin to translate that. If you want more time to think about it, we're okay with that too. We don't have a deadline right now that says we have to make this decision before the end of the year. In fact, one of the reasons we brought this now is to create enough time so there would be an opportunity for you to be able to think about it and give us guidance that you're comfortable with.
So if you don't mind, I just have a couple more things. I'll hurry. I did receive a phone call from Robin Tassel. Robin's been here before. She's from Chelan. She's part of the group in Chelan, which includes Tammy Haig and Laura, and they've all been here, who oppose AMI. And she asked me to share her comments. She couldn't be at the meeting today. And I know you've heard this before, but you know, I have it in my voicemail, but I don't want to bring it up and play it as a voicemail. But basically, their thought is that they don't want AMI. They didn't ask for it. They don't feel like they should have to pay for it. They oppose paying a one-time fee or paying a monthly fee. And then, you know, she made a few more comments about the health effects, which we've heard from them before. So those were her comments, kind of representing her group. And so then I just have one more comment, which is I personally would like to see us charge minimal charges. I know we have a cost. I know we have to charge something, or we should charge something, but I think it should be minimal. And then my one real strong request is that senior and disabled folks pay nothing, pay zero. And that cost is borne by all the rest of the ratepayers.
We will not have unanimity on that.
I was certain we probably wouldn't.
And I just did a rough, you know, $60 a month times 12 month a year, if 60 was the cost that was being, quote, subsidized, is a $700 a year subsidy to an individual customer. I'm not comfortable with that. That's a lot of money. We've gone a long way to be transparent and not show favoritism in our utility. And I think that this would be a step the wrong direction if we didn't show some balance, again, recognizing that the people do have concerns. We're providing an option for them to not be part of the normal utility process where 99% plus of the people will be. I don't think we should be asking the other 99% to pick up that tab.
Which tab in particular, specifically?
The monthly fee difference. If Grant County is accurate, they're close to at $65. I think we, you know, you look at that range there, and granted it's a range. I was really curious about Avista and that UTC mandated that they do that.
Yes, these were the levels set by the UTC. Their monthly fee, if they were to read meters every month, they predicted would be about $40 a month. We aren't suggesting reading meters every month. And when they went to, I think they're bi-monthly now, so I think their estimate was 25 or so on actual cost.
Yeah, so anyway, the one-time fee is one item. The one I'm more concerned about is the ongoing, because that one adds up to real money over in a very short amount of time.
So, Randy, what are your thoughts on the senior? The only one that I don't want to see a fee at all would be the senior and the disabled. What's your thought on that?
I'm thinking we are one-third of the state average on our bills right now, and a discount is fine, but free, I think we've got to think about the entire population of Chelan. A discount is fine.
So I'll just give you my thoughts briefly for whatever those are worth. This is a decision that is made for achieving our mission of enhancing the quality of life, innovation. The decision was made to become a more effective, competitive organization. It's part of our business plan to achieve the best for the most for the longest. So it's an investment that we're making to accomplish that. We've done our due diligence. We haven't rushed into this. We've looked at the studies on health effects. And from what I've seen, it's not played out that there are health effects. So the way I view this is that regardless of whether you are an opt-in or opt-out customer, everybody is going to get one of these meters, and it's either going to be turned on or turned off. And if somebody's electing to have it turned on quarterly to have it read, the benefit is still there to us, as I see that. So I don't believe in a one-time fee. I believe that that's the investment that we're putting across the board. However, I don't believe that, and the opt-out option is fine. But I believe somebody has, if they want to do that, they have to pay the cost of that. And I don't fault them on that. I believe that they should have that option, but the burden of that cost is up to them. I'm not interested in subsidizing and encouraging opt-out, because this is something that we're doing to improve our organization, and I don't want to encourage opting out. So I'm at a different point, and yet I do struggle with you look at the amount of money, what's reasonable versus what's the actual cost. I think we'll come into some agreement there, but I'm not interested in in a subsidy that if somebody wants to opt out, then they pay the cost of that. And I don't believe that we charge the one-time fee. That's kind of where I stand.
I'm sorry, you say do not charge the one-time fee?
Correct. Because we still benefit from that reading, whether it's quarterly or monthly, ongoing. So answer this one question for me. So let's say somebody does the quarterly manual read or download. That person leaves and somebody else comes into that apartment. Is that still that on-off switch still controlled because we have the meter, or does that have to be controlled, changed on-site?
Commissioner, that's I'd really like to dig into that more. We've spent some time trying to understand what the capabilities of these meters are, and again, they continue to evolve, but I think a good takeaway for me is to come back with what involves a truck roll versus what can be done in the office, what capabilities from a turn on, turn off, just so we understand fully if this is the path we're going down with one meter, with the communication device disabled, what options does that enable us?
So we can understand that, and you can translate that to layman's terms so that I can understand it. I think that would help me with particularly the one-time fee.
Right.
There's still some benefits to our organization having that on the house, even if it's turned off. I think we shouldn't charge. Thank you.
Steve, what's your thought on the senior and disabled fee?
I'd like to know, I guess I'd like to know, I need to think about that some more, Ann. I just need to ponder that some more. I'm not opposed to that, I just...
And I would chime in and reflecting back on the one-time fee slide that you had, it showed initial meter configuration and install 2 hours, and then there was a box that said future meter exchange cost. And I think this dovetails into Commissioner McKenna's comments. My understanding was that the meter could be configured remotely and wouldn't require actually a truck roll out to those locations. If that's the case, then you're removing a significant charge for the one-time setup. And I also feel that if we're able to collect the data, but it requires a truck roll to go out and read the meter, then essentially we are receiving the same benefit, just a little more effort, time, cost for us. That should be embedded in the monthly charge, not in a one-time fee. So I'm leaning at this point to agree with Commissioner McKenna that we really need to visit the value of a one-time fee. Is there really enough cost that warrants us passing that on to a customer? Moving on to the monthly fee, I'm going to anticipate your question of me, and that is what would I believe qualifying senior or disabled customer would receive. What is a qualifying senior? Is there an age?
An age and an income level.
Age and an income level. Okay. Thank you. I agree that there should be some level of discount, and that discount level should be significant. I just don't know what it is. I need to ponder that. The monthly fee, here I need time to really soak. If I just do an average of the six utilities that are similarly sized to us, it's $27.16. I'm a numbers guy. What can I say? I'm not sure that's the right number, but it's at least it kind of helps me to get my arms around a little bit about the direction I might be heading. But I need more time on that.
Thank you so much.
if it's helpful so that you can take all of this back, I agree with Steve McKenna's analysis, and I absolutely agree with his justification for no one-time fee, but I do think we need a monthly fee. And if, could you go back one slide, Lindsay, just mm-hmm. the slide we were on? So if we take out the green box, well, anyway, you know, I could land right on $50 per month. I don't really care what all the other utilities do because there are other utilities and we're very different than all the rest of them. So you're estimating $30 to $80 per month. If we landed on $50 a month, kind of an average or close to it, and then we could adjust it as needed. And in terms of the senior and disabled customers, well, you know where I stand, but I could not possibly settle for less than a 50% discount for those folks. They've paid their dues.
Well, this is for the 100 people that might opt out. So the senior, would we actually have any of them?
Right. We might not have any, and it's going to be very minimal.
So but if we could take the same philosophy that we have now and apply that to low-income seniors, mm-hmm. disability, mm-hmm. I would be fine with that. I agree that $40 to $50 a month ballpark is something I think is reasonable. I cringe when you start heading up to $70 and $80 a month. That just doesn't feel right. But and yet I still am pretty emphatic that I, you know, this is a business case. There's reasons why we're doing it. But we don't want to incentivize not doing it. So, but I do want to give people some options. So that's kind of what.
We might end up with unanimity.
We're getting closer, aren't we?
Yeah. It's made a lot of progress. I'm thinking we're just going to sit here and be quiet for a little while.
From where it started, it was good.
So I hope that gives you some feedback.
It does. Thank you very much. And yes. We will dig in a little more on the meters themselves and what their capabilities are for the remote operation and look at the fees.
I'm not sure when Commissioner Bowles will be available to talk, but certainly you'd want to get his feelings on it too.
Yeah, we expect that to hopefully be before the next meeting. So, yeah. I actually, you really did give us quite a bit to work with there, and so I think we can put a proposal together. We will try to sit down with Commissioner Bowles between now and December 16th and. Ask him, actually what we'll do is ask him to listen to the tape so he's heard all of your perspectives rather than us trying to interpret that for him. And then see, I think there's enough here that we probably will come back on the 16th with our thoughts and about where we think a landing zone may be.
Thank you. Good.
Thank you guys.
Oh, just one last comment. But you're probably aware of this. You're going to have a group in Chelan of opt-out folks. I don't know how sizable. It might be 25. I'm not sure. Maybe more. And you're going to have a group in Leavenworth. And then beyond that, it's going to be scattered, I think. But I think we do know that, don't we?
I think that's accurate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we looked at the 100 just based on public meetings.
Did you?
And just thought that was probably a reasonable assumption. Mm-hmm.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was a very helpful conversation. We're ready to move to the next agenda item. I know this will be a riveting discussion from our general counsel about identity theft prevention.
I know you've been waiting for this all year. Commissioners, it is that time, usually the first or second meeting in December, where we circle back and give you the update on identity theft prevention program. You recall, for background, in 2009, pursuant to federal statutes, the board did adopt a formal identity theft prevention policy, also known as the Red Flags policy. That policy is policy 406 in the district's administrative policies. That policy establishes a committee to meet and review measures that the district can take in order to continue to enhance protection of identity theft materials, social security numbers, names, addresses, primarily customer information. You've heard year over year the many measures that we have in place. The committee did indeed meet on the 13th of November this past year, happy to say there's nothing that requires specific reporting for 2019. In terms of what's happening, we are providing an analysis now of an RCW on notice of security breaches for personal information that's been amended by the legislature in this past legislative session. It changes very minor, very minor bit, and we're reviewing that statute, which becomes effective March of 2020, to see if there are any changes to policy that are required. Don't anticipate any, but we are doing that review. Beyond that, we're going to continue to follow all of our prevention protocols, and we will keep you updated if anything changes or requires reporting. Happy to answer any questions, or we can move on.
Commissioners, any questions? Eric, thank you.
Next up, we've got utility service policy and regulations updates. Kathy Melton will be making this presentation.
Morning, Commissioners. Customer Service Program Analyst. This will be equally riveting as well. Sure.
That's a high bar.
I know.
It was. I will note for the record that the meeting on November 13th was so exciting that Kathy was the only committee member that chose not to attend.
I will blame my daughter for that one. So, Commissioners, we have the Policy Review Committee, and we meet throughout the year. And what that comes to is we have our annual recommendations for adjustments that need to be made to our regulations and our policies. And so today there's no action being asked of you, but these will be a preview of those recommendations that have come from the committee's work. So the first revisions that we're looking at are really just a refinement of items that you have adopted late last year that went into effect January 1 of this year. And so this is just taking that language that we had in our line extension policy that was talking about partial payments for line extensions and making it a little bit more clear. So that really ultimately what it comes down to is that payment in full is required in order for a customer's project to get scheduled for work to be performed by our crews. So it's just making that language a little bit more clear for them. Also making it clear that if there is a change in the project scope that occurs between estimating and when that work is scheduled, that that may require the district to re-estimate those costs and make sure to incorporate any of those changes into that final cost our customer pays. And then also it's just clarifying and putting some bookends into our latecomers fee section so that it's clear that there is an eligibility window for customers to submit those receipts to be considered for the shared costs. We've had an instance where our staff were put in a predicament of having to confirm that receipts that were submitted several years later were in fact hinged to that line extension. And so this just makes it a little bit more clear that we do need to have a window with those receipts to be submitted. And then our other changes are in our utility service regulations. And again, this is something that's been in practice today and also for several years, but it's really highlighting the need for any of our new or our altered electric services to have that final L&I inspection performed. And that way that we know that our customers are going to be receiving those utility services in a safe fashion. L&I has signed off on it and everything looks good. Particularly when looking at any of those, as I mentioned, new services or a service that has been disconnected for a period of a year or more. And then also those temporary services. Temporary services are designed for construction purposes. And we really need to get that L&I inspection confirmed before it's transitioned over into occupancy for those customers. As I said, extremely riveting information today. So our next steps will be to return at our next board meeting with a resolution for you to adopt those changes if you feel so inclined. If there's any questions, I'm happy to take those.
Commissioners, any questions?
Kathy, the photos are riveting.
Well, thank you.
I stop on a photo.
Well, I came through on at least part of that, and that's good.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
We're at an interesting decision point. Through the morning study session, and we can easily jump into manager items and a few other things. I would ask you to consider one thing, which is my guess is you're going to face a choice in about 20, 30 minutes as to whether we take on the afternoon agenda. We don't have public present at this point, or whether we wait and just break and come back at 1 o'clock to do the afternoon agenda. So you might be thinking about that as we begin to move forward here.
So the only clarification is we will have to assemble at 1 for the public hearing.
Right.
Everything else we can do.
In terms of manager items, we'd like to start with a bond rating update from Debbie Litchfield and Heather Ireland.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Debbie Litchfield, Treasurer, and with me is Heather Ireland, our lead Treasury Analyst. I also want to recognize Kelly Boyd, our Chief Finance and Risk Officer in the audience, who provides our leadership and support for this project. High bond ratings are ultimately keep our rates low for our customer owners and could bring lower interest rates when we're in the bond market to fund for our valuable capital assets. We also see benefits from our high bond ratings with respect to contracts that we negotiate that allows us to negotiate more favorable provisions for the district. We've been working with rating agencies on their updates for the last few months as part of the internal policy of a periodic review that the rating agencies do on a 1 to 2 year cycle. And it was time for Fitch Ratings to do their update. So Kelly, Heather, and I met with them in October. We also hosted them on a tour of Rocky Reach, and Bob Bauer conducted that tour, and he did a fantastic job as usual. So today we're here to share the exciting and riveting news about an update on the Fitch review. So we're happy to be able to report that Fitch has affirmed the district's AA+ stable rating on our consolidated and hydroelectric project debt ratings. And as you know, we've been working hard to achieve this level, and it puts us among the most highly rated utilities in the nation by both Fitch and Standard & Poor's, who has some AA+ ratings for us as well. With the details of the report, I'll turn that over to Heather.
Good morning. Thanks, Debbie. A few of the key strengths that Fitch highlighted in their report included the district's sizable portfolio of valuable hydro-generating resources, and also our ability to produce exceptionally low-cost power. They also pointed out that we have very solid revenue defensibility due to strategies that are in place to hedge our power portfolio, both from price risk, hydro risk, and also for counterparty credit risk management. They pointed out our very strong retail rate flexibility from two different points, both because of the independent ability of the board to adjust those rates and because our rates are among the most competitive and affordable in the entire nation. They also described our accumulation of cash reserves that have been prudently set aside for increased capital spending over the next few years. And finally, they also discussed our very robust financial flexibility, which has been achieved through prudently using margin from wholesale sales to reduce our debt leverage. They specifically noted that the district has reduced debt by over $300 million, or approximately a third, between 2013 and 2018. And this achievement really would not have been possible without customer owners, commissioners, and staff's commitment to our strategic priorities over the last 5 years. With the affirmation of this AA+ rating, it really shouldn't be surprising that the vast majority of Fitch's report focused on our valuable assets and strong financial results. It really is a very positive and glowing review of the district. They did point out a few areas which we need to continue to keep our eye on in the future, such as the potential impact of persistently low market prices. However, at the same time, they note that we've successfully been able to manage our exposure to these risks through a a mix of rolling medium and long-term contracts over the next 5 years. And overall, the district should be extremely proud to continue to be among the top-rated utilities in the nation.
So, Commissioners, I want to thank you for your continued dedication to our strong financial policies and also to the strategic plans that you've adopted and making those decisions that are consistent with those policies. It takes the entire organization working together to be able to achieve this, and with the strong results, and we've done that. So certainly something to be very proud of. We anticipate that Moody's will be maybe doing a review in spring of 2020, and we also anticipate that should we decide to proceed with the financing in 2020 that we've been discussing as the 2020 plan of finance, that we will be working with all three rating agencies to do ratings on that financing should that occur next year. So to wrap up, an important part of these periodic ratings analysis are that they're an independent review that's conducted on our financial health and wellness check. And it can give our customer owners confidence that we're doing all the things that we need to be doing to keep our organization in strong financial shape. So the Fitch report will be posted on our website, so that will be available there. And then we're also handing out to you our updated summary, which is, we also have it, it's on the rating summary November 2019, so it's on your board site as well. So this gives an updating of kind of a summary of the ratings from all three of the rating agencies and the perspectives that they have on this, the strengths and the opportunities that the district has, as well as a comparison of the peer ratings for your reference. So we hope that that is helpful for you. At this point, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Commissioners?
Well, this is riveting news, so yes. I want to express my appreciation for, as you said so well, that it really, from the bottom up through the organization, it takes everybody to get to that point. And the benefits are great, and just such great news, and couldn't be happier.
Thank you. All right, we'll have that information out there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for all your hard work and for everyone involved throughout the district that has made this possible.
Thank you.
And we'll be bringing back plan of finance discussion next board meeting as we move forward to potentially take advantage of this rating too. With that, I want to invite Mario Cantu to come up to talk about the upcoming event.
Buenos dias. Good morning, everyone. Mario Cantu. And here to provide a quick update slash invitation to the fourth annual Fiesta Decembrina organized and put together by Chelan County PUD. This is, again, the fourth annual event here, and this event came about, what happened there? In an effort to continue to engage and promote participation from our Hispanic Latino customers with district initiatives, and I just wanted to give you a chance to take a look at a few photos that we've taken over the last few years. The 2018 Fiesta Decembrina was in partnership with the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, the Wenatchee Chamber of Commerce, Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, the Spanish radio station La Nueva or Alpha Media Group, and about 150 folks showed up. Folks who attended the event learned about energy conservation. They also learned about different district initiatives. They got a chance to also learn about connecting circuits with Bob Bauer there in the background. You'll see him just sharing some education with some of our youth there. And it really is just an overall great stewardship event to show the commitment of the district to continue to engage with the community abroad and diverse groups. So it's a well-put-together event, very well-organized. We have refreshments, we have information, we have literacy, we promote district initiatives, and it's just a great way to also promote a two-way communication channel, not only for us to be able to share what's going on in the district, but also for us to listen what it is our customers' expectations are for the district to deliver on. So just a few photos there, Shiloh and Teresa there with Parque Padrinos. This was 2018. then we'll go down to Leavenworth for 2017 Fiesta de Sembrina. And believe it or not, more than 120 people showed up in Leavenworth. It was really cold. But again, it just really shows the willingness of our customers at large to work with us and to be open to what we have to say. And what we do is we collect some of that feedback. We listen to what our customers have to say. We bring it back to headquarters, and we continue to develop language access. Most recently, we did a down power line video in Spanish, but all of our strategic planning material was in both languages, English and Spanish. A survey was both in both languages, English and Spanish. Website content, safety messages, you name it. We continue to improve and learn on that. So just a few photos there. And again, it takes a mighty team to do all this work. So show some support there. Some folks from office services, energy conservation, communications, and a couple of our interns, as well as some Fiverr folks in the room there. This is for 2017 in Leavenworth. And this was actually our first ever Fiesta de Sembrina at the auditorium. If you remember, we used to have that place of the downstairs there. The auditorium was a terrific venue to do community gathering. Again, just images talk or say more than 100 words. But I just wanted to, that photo in particular just tells you, or it tells me, that flyer potentially could be the connection to that young lady and how she can turn her life around and learn more about Chelan County PUD, how she can build a career. And we allow that to happen. So I like to think that in a way we're changing people's lives, we're enhancing the quality of life of Chelan County residents by doing what we do. So, anyway, more photos. Our first annual Fiesta de Sembrina back in 2016. It was a Sunday night from 8 to 10. And it was about 18 degrees outside. We had about 50 people waiting outside the doors before the doors opened. They're really excited to engage with Chelan PUD, and they wanted to find out more about what we had to say. And it's just it's a great way to validate the efforts we're putting together. So, with that, you are invited to the fourth annual Fiesta de Sembrina. That will happen, or it's scheduled for December 20th at Pipus Market, from 8 to 10 p.m. And again, this is a PUD organized event in collaboration with the Pipus Market, the Spanish radio station La Nueva, Alpha Media Group, Molina Healthcare, and a few other community volunteers. So thanks for your ongoing support for language access and diversity groups. And I hope to see you on the 20th.
Great. Ariel, thank you very much. A quick question for you. You mentioned conservation. The conservation was in attendance and discussed the opportunities that conservation provides.
Yes, of course. We continue to work closer with conservations. The most recent example I can give you is for Make a Difference Day, October 26th. Sergio, Griselda, Susan, and I went to the community center in South Wenatchee, provided over 1,000 LED light bulbs to customers or neighbors in South Wenatchee, and we scheduled 20-plus in-home energy home audits. So those are great numbers to show for, and we continue to work with them, continuing on that.
Great. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
One more manager item I wanted to cover. So the work continues with respect to the Columbia River Treaty renegotiation. The U.S. entity and the State Department have scheduled meetings around the region at different places to talk about the progress in those negotiations. At the behest of Representative Newhouse, they've scheduled one for the Tri-Cities, Kennewick, I believe, for December 16th in the evening. I do think it's important that Chelan PUD be present at that, and I think it makes sense that it be at the commissioner level. Have spoken with a couple of the commissioners. I know Commissioner Smith is available and can represent Washington PUD Association. Commissioner Arsenault is available to represent the PUD as president of the board. I don't think there's a limitation on the number of folks that can show up for that. They do have a rigorous process for this, limited time frame for comments, generally not questions asked by the U.S. government team that's there. So it's a presentation. They hear, you sit down, and next person comes up and speaks. So that's the format that we anticipate this being. And we're planning that we would have two representatives there at a minimum for that that session. So I want to make sure the board was fully aware that this is coming, and this is an opportunity for us to express our views on the renegotiation process.
So is Randy our spokesman?
Chelan, for Chelan, Gary.
Oh.
I've requested, I've talked with George Kahn, and he's indicated that would be well within my role as Wapuda president to represent Wapuda. So that's my intent.
And there are slightly different comments. Wapuda would represent all of the customers, including the Bonneville preference customers, and Chelan would be representing a mid-sea perspective.
I would invite other commissioners to attend if your schedule permits.
Okay, and my suggestion at this point is that we move through the afternoon agenda items 18, 19, and 20, which is commission items, commission travel, and follow-up on delegation action items.
Do we want to put this off to the afternoon?
And I was going to come back to that after we did that.
Okay.
And I was going to consult with our council on that real quickly, to be honest, about making sure that we do this in the right way.
Okay. All right. Okay. Commissioners, on commission items? I have something very brief to let the commissioners know, but also general counsel and staff. Results of a attendance of a seminar summit, actually cybersecurity summit, in Nashville, Tennessee. It was a 3-day event. First day was a workshop put on by the Department of Energy with hands-on training to recreate a cyber attack that actually took place in the Ukraine at a power company there. Very enlightening, quite scary, actually. And then the following 2 days were presentations by Homeland Security and also additionally from Department of Energy. And then there were a handful, perhaps a half a dozen, cities and counties that had been hacked and had cyber attacks, ranging from Florida, New York, Tennessee, Missouri. The message was very similar in every case. Typically, it was a spear phishing event. Somebody opened an email they shouldn't have opened, and even though they might realize it immediately, the infection is so rapidly spreading throughout the system that if you unplug that computer, it's too late. It's already spread. So it really brought home the significance of the attack. Each of you will receive today a hard copy of my notes from that workshop and seminar. I think you'll find it sobering. If there's one brief thing that I would say I came away with, and that is the level of sophistication of the perpetrators. Daily, it the sophistication is getting greater. Unlike what I naively suggested, that it was just some kid in his parents' basement with a computer and a lot of time on his hands, that is not the case. The majority of the cyber attacks are led by rogue nations who hire individuals, put them in their military. It's a military unit. These folks are paid. They're highly educated. They're smart, and their job is to find cracks in the wall and crawl in everywhere, anywhere. Basically, two types of attacks. One is a disruption, where they would turn off the lights and then allow you to struggle to get them back on, and the second is a ransom. The third is where they do both, where they'll turn off the lights, they'll seize your system, they'll take your data, and then they'll want a ransom. Because now time becomes critical to get them back on. So the takeaway is these are very, very sophisticated attacks. These are being operated by rogue nations whose sole intent is for disruption and a little bit of money, a little bit of Bitcoin. I will make that report available later on today. Quite frightening. And hearing firsthand how these cities and counties who were attacked, and some chose to pay the Bitcoin, which is kind of a comical story in itself. Where do you buy Bitcoin? The second is those cities and counties that chose not to pay, and the fact that they were without data for months and months and months, and in some cases never retrieved the data. So I will I'll hand those out to folks later today.
And we would intend to incorporate that into our cybersecurity executive steering committee review to make sure that we've addressed the issues that were raised there.
Good. Thank you.
One other commissioner item I just need to share with Commissioner Congdon that she's going to be really disappointed that she doesn't get to come see me in a whole new light this week in Vancouver, because, you know, we're supposed to. Getting to know you, you would get to know me as you never seen me before.
Oh, give me some hints.
We'll have to videotape that for you, Ann.
Please do.
Okay.
Just a quick word. I was pleased to see, and I apologize, I don't have the name of the working commission and working panel. One of our staff members was appointed to recently, so if we could just mention that as part of this, I would appreciate that. I thought that was very impressive, and sorry I don't have the details, but
Melissa?
It was Melissa Lyons, yes, and for one of the working groups to implement the Clean Energy Transformation Act. Yeah. And it's an issue that she's worked on for quite some time and established a reputation, too.
Good.
There was a nice article in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Okay. With that, I think we are ready to discuss commission travel. And I believe Lisa has joined us. Lisa, sorry for the short notice and calling you out.
All right, I'm close by.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, Randy, Pauly sent out a update on our 2019 cyber security tests, so you might find that interesting today. Anyway, this week we have Waputa in Vancouver, Commissioner Arsenault, McKenna, and Smith attending. Commissioner Arsenault leaving tomorrow, is that right?
Yes.
And Commissioners McKenna and Smith are leaving on Wednesday. That corrected. Commissioner Smith going to Rewire Policy Conference on the 10th in Seattle, one day over and back. We have January Waputa meetings in Olympia, the 15th through 17th. We have rooms held for those, and February 12th through 14th. APPA legislative rally in February in Washington, D.C. We have Commissioners Arsenault, Bowles, and Smith attending. Do we need to follow up on your hotel, Commissioner Arsenault?
I still need to make a phone call, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And we do have your airfare booked.
Great.
Just a comment for you or Rebecca, at this moment in time, nothing about Waputa shows up on my PUD calendar for next year. There's not a thing on there. And so,
I'm not sure if Sheila sends those out or if Waputa.
Placed it on my home calendar, but it's not, you know, and you've got the dates, and so just entering it in would really be helpful, because you've got hotel reservations too, right? Mm-hmm. So that'd be easier for you to enter in than for me.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So we've got that as a takeaway.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner Congdon, NWPPA in March. Hope you so. Attending that?
Mm-hmm.
in Portland?
No, actually, that's in California.
Oh, okay.
That's in, can't say it right now.
Is it mid-March or is it the 5th? Is it later in March?
I think it's mid-March.
Okay, so I put the wrong event on here then.
Not
I'll
Rocky,
check it out.
Reno. It's in Reno.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But we'll
I'll update
we'll
that.
Talk about that later.
Okay.
Well, it's not California, is it?
Nevada.
Right.
Okay. Then for the rest of the Waputa meetings, I have rooms held except for locations that are to be determined. Commissioner Congdon, May NWPPA conference, did
yes.
you plan to attend that?
Yes.
Anyone else?
In May.
That's in Kennewick.
Which one is, what is it?
It's in Kennewick.
But what
in
it,
May,
what is, not where?
NWPPA
what?
Annual meeting.
Hmm.
I put me down as attending that.
Okay.
I will not be going.
You will? Right. Okay. All right. Do you want to keep going month, event by event? Are we far enough ahead?
I think we're out.
One, probably go one more. The APPA National Conference, June 8th through 10th. Who's going to be attending that?
I think I am.
Yes. Do you know where that is?
It's in something Beach, California. The
Long Beach?
I think it's in Long Beach. It's Long Beach. She's got it on here, so June 8th to 10th.
And I
will be. Yeah, I'll be going to that.
As will I.
Mr. Congdon? No? McKenna?
Yes.
Okay. And I think I just need Commissioner McKenna's October expense report returned. And we have finally cleared all of the canceled tickets. Commissioner, amounts to be refunded and conference cancellations that needed to be refunded to the district as well. So I'll go ahead and clear all these tables off at the end of the report for beginning in 2020. So those have been on there for a long time. I'm pretty excited about it.
That's good, doesn't it?
Yeah. There. Do you want to change this report at all? Is there anything that
this is good.
I can do that's more helpful?
I think you're doing a great job.
It's good.
Really yeah. helpful.
Nice work.
We're staying on top of it.
Okay. I'll work on getting Waputa dates on your calendars.
That would help. That would be helpful. I'm, you know, because you've got the, you're going to put the hotel confirmation
right.
on there anyway. So.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Okay.
That well, might be all it takes is putting hotel confirmation. Well, it's in labeling it Waputa. Yeah.
Right, right. Okay. Well, let me know if there's anything else I can do.
Great.
Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah. Thanks, Lisa.
Okay. I thought we'd walk through delegation of action items from the from previous meetings. A few that we have completed. First, we had one that we just had not marked off on an update on Arondo Park. You did get that at the District Performance Plan update, which is essentially that we're rolling this over for another year as we wait for the port mergers to happen, which has been their highest priority right now. You should have received some information about the depreciation timeline for the Nine Canyons Wind Turbine Project,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully that has answered that question. And then it's always nice to have Friday after Thanksgiving. Rebecca cleared out a whole bunch of stuff for you, including the work on the board effects that's now up and running in the way that I think you had asked for at the board workshop.
Thank you, Rebecca.
That was a lot of work. Thank you.
Now I'm going to hang on to that one. Well, Rebecca feels I should report on this, so I guess I will.
She's in embarrassed.
So we have the item to follow up on how we're going to get the word out about the 2020 Women in Public Power Conference. Lorna is working on that and getting a notice out inside the organization. But we don't have that pulled together exactly how we're going to do it yet. And with that, I am ready to call an audible, if that's okay with you. I really did expect to spend more time this morning than we have in the study session. So we are scrambling to get people into the room to take care of some of the afternoon session items. And so I would like to suggest that I know I've got Mike Coleman here. And so what I'm going to start doing is grabbing people as they're available to go through afternoon resolution items.
So we also need a motion to pass the consent agenda. We can do that before we start that, if we could.
You can.
You can?
I would move approval of the consent agenda, which now includes resolutions 13, 14, and 15.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. And so now we would go to item 12, which is a resolution authorizing the general manager enter into a services agreement, SA number 19-10500, with Northwest Open Access Network of Gig Harbor, Washington, for network operations center services. Mike Coleman's going to step in for folks that he was planning to have here for the afternoon.
Thank you. Mike Coleman, managing director of Fiber and Telecom, and I am going to substitute for Bob Shane and Ron Auger, who would normally have been here presenting this at 1 p.m. As you're aware from the past, we use a NOC service to provide our 24-hour service to the retail service providers and also to assist us in various operational functions. We have been using NOAANet for a number of years now, and we recently extended that contract in order to give us an opportunity to go out and survey the market. Based on advice from a consultant who felt that many companies are not used to the public procurement process, rather than doing an RFP, we chose to use an alternative procurement process of direct negotiation for a service. We did have four companies that participated in this process, and at the end of the day, NOAANet was still deemed to be the best at a reasonable price to provide the functionality and the services that we require. So in light of that, we are asking to enter into an agreement. It is a five-year agreement, 3 years plus two optional years. We built flexibility into this agreement because we're in the process of replacing the portal, and coming with that will be full automatic provisioning. So that will change the scope of what the NOC services provider has to perform and allow us to save some money in the future. We don't have that quite ready today, so we have our traditional scope of work, which we've gone through carefully in going out in this iteration of it. And then as the automated provisioning comes online, we will change the scope of work. So we had a desire last time to go out in a competitive process and find the best provider that we could. And we had that same desire this time, and we still ended up with the same service provider because they did provide a competitive response and a competitive price to us. So, any questions?
Commissioners?
Mike, I have a question.
Yep.
Is there another organization that could step in if need be, and take over that process, the NOC process?
There are always other organizations. It would come at a price and with a learning curve. It is something that we look at very carefully, and that was one of the reasons we chose this alternative procurement process, was to be able to evaluate the companies and particularly to get a feel for their capabilities and their ability to understand the actual work operations and the requirements we were placing on them. So yes, the other three companies that were involved, some cases it was price, in some cases it was a lack of comfort with their full understanding of the scope that was required of them. But any of them could be utilized in a pinch if Noanet was unable to fulfill. It would just be a matter of getting them on board, getting them up to speed, and looking at what it cost us.
Thank you. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Next up, I want to take item 16. So this is a resolution declaring Altec Industries of Dixon, California as the sole source supplier of digger derricks and bucket trucks for Chelan County PUD. Dan Frazier will be presenting.
Thanks, Steve. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services, which includes Fleet Service. We're here to ask for approval of a resolution, and it's actually a sole source and name brand resolution. So we like to name Altec Industries as our name brand truck that we use for both bucket trucks and digger derricks, and we have about 45 of these in our fleet right now. We'd also recognize that the only supplier of Altec trucks is Altec Industries, and so we'll be naming them as a sole source. So it actually covers both purposes. The district has been effectively name branding the Altec vehicles for several years because we had procurement methods available to us to use state contracts or cooperative purchasing contracts to pick basically the vehicle that we wanted to use. And we really centered on Altec because of three main considerations: operations, maintenance, and then levels of service that Altec provides to us. The operations piece really centers around our line crews and our communications crews using the same type of vehicle, the same controls, the same predictability of operations. It really gets kind of enhances that HPI principle of getting people out of knowledge base. If you hop from a VersaLift truck to an Altec truck or a Lift Easy truck, it's different. And every time you get in, you're going to move from different types of controls and different safety equipment and where do I hook up and where are my tools. And so for operational consistency and HPI principles, we've centered on the Altec truck. As far as maintenance is concerned, our shop now has been, because we've been Altec for effectively 10 years, we've centered our tooling and our training and our maintenance around the Altec brand. We're very comfortable. We do over 180 inspections every year in the fleet shop of all these vehicles. And so knowing exactly where all the parts and pieces are, with how the systems operate, we can inspect these more efficiently and we catch things because we know what we're looking for. And then finally, the level of service that Altec provides. They have a network across the state. They have a technician that's in Wenatchee and Central Washington every week. And all these are, or most of these are considered critical assets that we track, that their emergency response. So when the power's out, these are emergency response vehicles. They can't be down for any length of time. And so we are proud to say we have over 95% uptime on our critical assets in fleet. And that's part of that is because Altec will be here when we call. And if we have a major problem that our crews can't take care of, our fleet technicians can't, they can be here very quickly. So for these reasons, we think it's best to stay with Altec. And the issue about the sole sourcing has to do with the fact that the state contract we have been using for the past 5 years was not renewed. The holder of that contract is the Washington State Department of Transportation. They have not gone out to bid. They may eventually, but we just can't wait. We buy several of these trucks every year. And so we thought it best to just declare the sole source and be able to work directly with Altec. We'll still be getting the same level of pricing that we are currently getting. And we have ways of checking that because there are some other national purchasing contracts that we use to compare pricing to make sure we will continue to get that pricing as we move forward.
Does that answer my question? Why it was a sole source?
Okay. Your entire argument fell on very fertile ground, and I'm in concurrence with it. But that, I'm assuming Altec is not the only manufacturer of line trucks.
No.
So there is competition in the world.
There is.
Do we not, what hit me is, do we not run the risk of perpetuating what I would call a self-fulfilling prophecy in the fact that unless we're willing to totally change our entire fleet at one time, we will never change?
That's something we look at. And so we have a standards committee that that includes linemen, communications linemen, supervisors, foremen. And they do talk about equipment, and they go to equipment shows. We do send our... we send our fleet staff to a couple of equipment shows a year, and this year was what's called IQ, which is a big utility show. Mm-hmm. And Alltech, because they are a leader, they're staying abreast of the changes. And so if something comes out that another manufacturer may come out with an interesting addition, maybe it's safety or some other thing, EPTO, which is something around... basically moving these trucks into a hybrid realm. A lot of focus on how do we hybridize our trucks and get more to the electric vehicle feel. They're right there with everybody else making those advancements. So we keep abreast of what's happening in the market. It does. There is a risk, I guess I'll call it, that we could get behind if we just stay with Alltech because simply
or
we
price stay competitiveness? Does that
enter? The price competitiveness, really, Alltech is a huge distributor. And we aren't going to get the same price that Avista is getting because we're not buying 40 trucks a year. We're buying four. But we do have great ability to compare the prices that we're quoting to other states, what they're providing other utilities of our size. We can look at all kinds of different public contracting because most of those are published and we can compare those out there. And really, we go through a process to bid that's very, very labor intensive and to contract and to go through that process to still arrive at the same answer. It seems like a little wasted effort if we're going to get to the same answer each time. So, okay.
Thank you.
You bet.
Commissioners.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I would move approval of resolutions 12 and 16.
Is there a second?
Second.
That's 12 or 14.
That was 16. 12 was yours.
Second. Sorry.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 There
you go. Good. I think we've actually accomplished what we can in the morning. We do have resolution 11, which is the budget item, but would really like to have Craig Koontz here for that. He's done a lot of work to get ready for it. We don't have a presentation for you, but it's to answer questions. So I'd like to save that one for the afternoon. And the public hearing needs to be saved for this afternoon. Okay. So those are the two things that we have left to do when we get back at 1.
All right. So we'll just have an extra long lunch this time. We are adjourned. We will reconvene at 1 o'clock. Good afternoon and welcome to the December 2nd, 2019 business session of the Chelan County PUD Commission meeting. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices you may have with you today. And we place great value on public input. Since our meetings are recorded, if you wish to address any item on the agenda, we ask that you please come forward to the opposing microphone, state your name or your address, and please, if you would, limit your comments to 3 minutes. We are now ready to move right into the public hearing, which is the 2020 to 2021 conservation targets.
Okay, I want to invite Andrew Gassell to come up. Just a reminder for the board, we did a detailed presentation at the last board meeting on this, and we were not planning to repeat that presentation. Ask Andrew if he has anything to add, and if not, we're available for questions from the board. Yep.
So, it's great. So what's before you is consideration is the resolution to establish our 10-year plan and 2-year target, as shown in Exhibit A of the resolution. Steve mentioned I provided a detailed presentation to you on November 18th, and additionally, today's meeting was publicly noticed on November 16th per legal requirements. So to date, we have not received any public input or from stakeholders or any of our customers, and so ask for your consideration in passing this resolution and setting these targets.
Commissioners, are there any comments, discussion? Hearing none, then I guess we're ready to take on the resolution.
You might ask Commissioner if there's any public comment, just for the record.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, sorry to interrupt. Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Eric. Looking around the room, is there any public comment? Hearing none, I think we're ready to address the resolution.
So I move to approve resolution number 6, establishing the district's 10-year conservation potential plan and 2-year conservation target for the 2020-21 year as required under RCW.
I'll second the motion.
So moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. The ayes have it.
Okay. Andrew, you make our job easy for us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank Appreciate you. It, Andrew. Thank, right, thank you.
With that, I think we're ready to move to the regular agenda, item 11. Invite Craig Kuntz to come up. This is a resolution approving the 2020 district budgets for the fiber network, water, wastewater, and integrated electric, including distribution, transmission, Columbia River, Rock Island Hydroelectric, Lake Chelan Hydroelectric, Rocky Reach Hydroelectric Systems, Treasury Services, Internal Service Systems, and Financing Facilities Business Lines. Craig, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon, Commissioners. As Steve said, this is a resolution for our 2020 budget. We had a hearing on the 4th of November and the 18th of November, two public hearings, and this is just the culmination of the process, and I'm here to answer any questions if there are any.
And I believe it's correct to say we have not received any public comment.
That's correct. We have not received any public comment.
You know, just a comment for the record. I know you guys start really early in the previous year of this year in this cycle, and the fact that we're not making a lot of comments today doesn't mean this is a small item for us. This is one of the top things that we as commissioners do, and I just want to say thank you for all the work and the process that you've taken us through, and I know it's been a lot more in depth with all the staff and the input that how you put this together. This is an important date, so it would, you know, I just wanted on the record for our recording how significant it is, even if we don't have a lot of questions for you.
I appreciate the feedback, and I would just note that it is a substantial effort, and there's a lot of people involved throughout the district and different parts of the organization that support the process, provide the information, ask the questions. So it is a substantial effort for a lot involved. They should all be. I could give you a list. It would pretty much be everyone.
And I think we feel good that it's been a good collaborative process with the board along the way, such that we can say confidently that we're in a position to implement the strategic plan that was just adopted, I guess it'd be 2 months ago today, roughly. So lots of effort where we were having discussion even through the summer about what the board direction was and able to incorporate that in the budget development process.
And I'd just like to take a second. I know I might be repeating myself, but I want to thank staff for the process and for the effort and for the time that has been spent to develop this budget. We've been consulted. It's been brought to the board. The board has been able to make comments, and that in some cases have resulted in changes to the budget. Staff would then bring it back, and we'd review it once again. And that brings us to this day today, where we are ready and prepared to take on addressing the budget and do the approval process. So very great kudos to entire staff for all the effort and time and energy that it has taken to get us to this point.
Thank you.
Commissioners.
I would move approval of resolution number 11. Adopting the 2020 district budgets.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Are there any discussions? Hearing no discussions, all those in favor of approving resolution number 11, say aye.
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 The ayes have it.
Thank you, Craig.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
At this point, we're done with the regular items, and we're all the way up to item 21, which is delegation of action items. And I have, with Rebecca's help, identified a few here. First of all, a few things with respect to AMI. One, we're going to look into the specific capabilities of the AMI meters for the company that we're working with in the negotiation process right now, what would require in terms of particularly shutting on and off the RF capability, and be able to bring that back to you at the next board meeting.
I do intend to meet with Commissioner Bowles to make sure that he's fully informed as the discussion and get his thoughts with respect to the discussion that went on here about a potential compromise and approach to both fees and monthly charges. And then it would be my expectation right now that we would put together a proposal based on what we heard today. I think we heard enough to at least put in some ideas on the table, a specific idea on the table. So we would plan to bring that back for the December 16th meeting. If it meets with your approval, we'd be ready to move forward at that meeting. And then the one other item is just to check into the 2020 Waputo events on the commissioner's calendars. And I shouldn't be surprised by this. There's a note at the end of that saying that has already been done.
Yep. Over the lunch hour.
That's right.
Shut up. And I think that's it, unless we miss something.
Okay. Do we have any additional public comment? Seeing no public in the audience. Any matters of general business? Hearing none. I guess, Eric, or we'll need a small executive session, short, about how long?
30 minutes.
About 30 minutes? So we'll be going into executive session for 30 minutes to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCW.
And to review?
No.
Yes, I would like to add that.
You would like to add that?
Okay. Yes.
And to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by RCW.
Thank you, Randy, for catching that.
Okay. We're coming out of executive session. It's December 2nd, 2019. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.